Good evening and welcome to this Friday's edition of Stockwatch. I'm Zinati Guma. And joining me to wrap this week up are Devon Shute from the Robey Group and Thamsanqa Netta from Shiloh Capital. Thank you to the both of you for joining me. Let's start off with macro. Of course, we had Fed Chair Jerome Powell speaking at that IMF meeting last night. And really seeming like the Fed is getting more and more hawkish. So is this the Fed finally, because he obviously said that 50 basis points will be on the table at the next meeting, which is next month. So starting with you, Devon, is this the Fed finally putting words into action and maybe course correcting as it now sees that it's been behind the curve?
Yes, look, I think this is what the market was pricing in, 50 basis points in May. It looks like we're going to get the same in June and possibly even in July. And I think this is the Fed possibly trying to play catch up for that. You could call it a policy mistake on waiting too long to react to that inflation that clearly wasn't transitory. And, you know, obviously the conflict in the Ukraine just accelerated those inflationary forces. So yeah, the Fed has definitely turned very hawkish. There's even, you know, certain parts of the market that are pricing in a 75 basis points hike. I think that's probably a bit much, but I think what you're seeing is the markets now seeing the reality of the faster monetary tightening coming into effect.
Indeed, the markets really do like to get ahead of themselves sometimes, because we are seeing more and more reports coming in that the markets might start pricing in 75 basis points hikes for the future. And actually, Tami, could this actually happen considering the fact that the Fed says it wants a soft landing?
It could, but a while ago, two Fed governors before, I think, with Alan Greenspan and Ben Bernanke, both said that the stock market is the fastest reactor to an interest rate movement. And I think what they're trying to do is to get the stock market to self-correct. They want to price in the changes without having them to force the interest rate hike. They know they've got a double-edged sword in inflation, plus the quantitative easing and the borrowings and the cheap money that's been available for the economy since 2008, pretty much. So now they understand that if they put on the brakes too hard, it will lead into a recession, which is what they don't want. So they're trying to warn the markets to self-correct, price correctly, price assets correctly. If that means a large market correction, that's fine. They don't want to be the ones to trigger it with their interest rates movement.
Quite interesting, Tami, there that you say that you mention those two Fed officials saying that the markets are the fastest reactor to interest rates. Going into tech, which are very interest rate sensitive, there's a question here. The headlines seeming quite panicky. If not tech, then what? I shared most of my tech stocks bought at the start of the pandemic through the last 2 years, thankfully with profit. But where to from now, Devon?
Yes, I mean, this is the trillion-dollar question at the moment. Tech has been a massive leader in the markets through the COVID crash and then subsequent recovery. And I think tighter monetary policy makes that potential investment into tech, particularly large US tech, much less obvious, right? You've got treasury yields rising, and that is having an impact on the discount rates and what the fair value for these companies to pay is. So make no mistake, a lot of these big tech companies are still massively cash generative. So it's not that they're uninvestable, but it's just the future profitability might not be at the faster trajectory that the market was paying for. So that means investors in quite an awkward situation at the moment. Those tech companies are classed as growth stocks, and we saw an attempted rotation into an unloved area of the market value a little while ago, and it might be very possible that with interest rates moving higher, the value side of the market might start to get a little bit more love. But, you know, I wouldn't abandon tech completely. I would stick to profitable tech and, you know, ones where you've got really clear earnings visibility, but it is going to be volatile, and you've seen that very clearly in the first quarter of this year, and it's continued this week, right? Markets are still trying to grapple with this conundrum.
Yeah. So basically what you're saying is that, you know, stick to tech if you see that the companies are profitable. So stock pick within that tech space. Tell me on your side, I mean, how are you looking at tech considering what we might see with interest rate hikes? And also considering that we might start to see dips, is this the time then to go into tech?
Yeah. So what we must understand a lot about technology is that the stock price is a reflection of future cash flows. So the valuation methodology, you're projecting what the company will potentially make in the future and pricing it today. Once the interest rate goes up, the interest rate is one of the fundamental elements of the discounted cash flow because the risk-free rate is in there. And once that interest rate goes up, the valuations then change and the view of the future will then change. If you are able to project what the companies are currently earning, and you see that value is greater, the share value is greater than the value that they're currently trading at, then you buy. Other companies which are projected, you don't know. For example, Tesla, its valuation is far disconnected from its current projections. So that might not be a great stock to pick if you see the future differently from Elon Musk. But I think in the main, what you're trying to do is find the value in the businesses. And the best places to find those values are in businesses that generate cash flows going forward.
All right, sticking with tech, let's go into Prosus. There's a question here. Prosus shares have halved this year. I would like to know if you think one should hold them, if there's any chance of a recovery or cut losses, Devin.
There's always a chance. I think there's a few key things that have to happen. I think there's a lot of criticism on the control structures of the company and the ability for ordinary shareholders to have an equivalent vote. I think also management has failed in their intention to close that discount to NAV and to the underlying holdings. In fact, it's got worse with this complicated Naspers process structure that they put in place. So, yeah, I mean, I think layer on that a Chinese tech clampdown last year, it's really been a tough place to be. They've got some great assets, they've got some less than optimal assets within there, and I think for investors there is potential upside, but I think the share price you're seeing now is more accurately reflective of the risks of the investment that the market just tended to look over in the past. So yeah, I'm not saying sell here. It's a difficult one. I'm not going to go out and say that. What I am saying is the risks are reflected and there is the possibility of upside.
Tell me, Prosus, the place to be or not? And also, I mean, just weighing up the two companies, Prosus and Naspers, which one would it be easier to go into and to get the most value?
Look, the bottom line of it is that the process was valued at a particular price largely because the view was a growth view. The growth view of Tencent and their portfolio of assets. Bob Van Dijk and his team have not been able to secure further transactions going forward. The delivery deal they tried to do didn't work out. They focused on closing the NAV gap rather than doing the right type of acquisitions, growing the business, growing the portfolio, continuing to be an emerging market technology or e-commerce platform investor and leading in that space, and they've turned their face or their eyes towards the valuation gap. And I think that's the real concern, because then investors have to now start saying, is there too much money in the hands of guys who don't know how to find value? And the future of Prosus will lie in the future of Bob Van Dijk and his team being able to continue to do deals, quality deals in the regions of the world that they have competitive advantage, which is the emerging market. So I think the view any investor must take must be on management. They are cash flush. They've got 6 billion in cash. They've got great assets, particularly one in Tencent. And my personal view is they must unbundle Tencent, give it to us as shareholders, take the money, and focus on building a business and an investment platform again. I think holding Tencent to some degree has made them quite lazy, and they are no longer focusing on trying to find quality assets with high growth potential, and they are now focusing on the financials and that valuation or NAV gap, which is a scary thing as an investor. You want your CEOs focused on the job, not on just the share price.
Talking about management and cash flush, it actually just reminded me of an article I read earlier on Capitec on the Financial Mail, really outperforming its peers on a number of metrics. I'm just interested because a lot of analysts say that, you know, the shares run so hard, it's quite expensive. So, Devin, I mean, it's put as a sell, and I'm wondering, where would you be looking then to be selling? Like, how long do you wait to actually sell that stock?
Yeah, look, I think there's two elements here, aren't there? There's the valuation of Capitec, and if I'm honest, that's always been fairly uncomfortable. It doesn't give you many opportunities to buy this. But in terms of the actual business and the bank itself, I mean, it's an incredibly high quality franchise. They carved a niche where everyone thought that the banking sector in this country was saturated. And what they did, they came in with unsecured lending and they've really built out that portfolio significantly in that regard. They've entered in some key strategic partnerships for value adds, and the return on equity reflects that. I mean, I think they're sitting at the highest return on equity in the sector at around 24%, and that's just showing the value that they're adding. So to your question, where do you buy this thing? I mean, it's something that we struggle with as well at the moment. I do tend to agree that the stocks probably run a little hard. It is a nice sector to be in our view. We think that domestic financials, particularly with a rising interest rate environment and kind of the more conservative lending criteria they had, the loan, non-performing loans post-COVID are really looking good. And Capitec is the pick of the bunch in many of those metrics. I'm not going to give you a number as to when, but we do like it.
Yeah, so we don't know where to buy, but at the same time, you know, on the other hand, do you hold or sell, Tammy?
Geez, I think the fundamental problem that Devin is speaking about is where you lie. If you're in, you hold. Trying to buy now is going to be quite tough because you've got a great company but a bad stock. So the stock has outrun a quality firm, right? So if you are Capitec management, I think you'll start thinking about looking at a dual listing structure, potentially getting a broader base of investors that can sort of spread out the risk and enable domestic investors to buy. Because at this stage, even PSG had to unbundle it, given the competitive nature and the price and the value. So if I was Capitec management, I'd be looking maybe at an LSC or some other sort of platform to enable a broader, much broader set of shareholders. If you are a current investor, you hold. If you don't invest, I think at this stage, consider that you might have missed the train and try and find another place to put your money.
All right. Let's go into U.S. earnings season. It's been quite a busy week. We've had quite a few interesting ones as well. To the both of you, pick one that was of particular interest to you, and if it's a buy, hold, or sell. Starting with you, Devin.
I'll take one that's been making headlines the last 2 days, and that's Netflix. They came out with the first ever drop in subscriber numbers, and the share capitulated fantastically. It lost about a third of its value. There were some very high-profile funds that exited. And I think there's a couple things at play here that viewers must just be aware of. One, the drop in subscribers is worrying. You know, is that just a once-off or is that a trend? But I think what got the market concerned is that their actual revenue model is potentially going to change now. They're going to start including adverts into the streaming service. And what that does, as you change that revenue model and the drivers for earnings for the business, is it just widens the potential outcomes as an investor you get. You know, the subscription model is fairly simple. It's easy to forecast. Now you've got advertising revenues and the sales that come with that and the nuances, and that becomes a lot more difficult. And I think Netflix could be moving into a very different model from what it was, and I think investors must just exercise caution. So I would not be a buy at this stage, despite that the share looks like it's on sale. I think the company now has to show how that new revenue model works and looks and feels before investors get involved.
And that's so you talk about this subscription model as well. I mean, is this just a Netflix problem, or could we see it, Devin, then moving to the other ones like Disney, Warner Brothers?
Yeah, no, it's very possible. I mean, there's lots of subscriptions out there. The beauty of them have been that they're usually at a price point that the subscribers don't mind, you know, marginal increases, but they've been clamping down on multiple users sharing logins. That's been a pain point and loss of revenue. And I think it's the companies that handle these better that will survive. So I love the subscription model. You know, it's annuity revenue, it's cash flow generative coming in. Netflix is obviously a big content provider and they spend a lot on that. I'm just not sure how this advertising model plays out, and as a result, I'm cautious on the stock.
You're cautious. Tell me your thoughts on Netflix. I mean, do you see any more growth in there? And is there maybe a need for Netflix to redirect focus?
So Netflix is currently facing the same problem that Microsoft faced before Nadella and what Apple faced before the return of Steve Jobs. They are big and they're able to do certain things. But now they have to reorganize themselves and address the new growth path. I think they'll face significant problems if they look inwards. If they start looking too detailed into the things that help them grow to this stage, they'll start having a disconnect between themselves and again their share price. I think what they need to start looking at is how to get themselves out of the herd of competition with Disney Plus, with HBO and the likes, and move themselves into a new phase. Maybe that's live TV, maybe that's broadcasting sports, or maybe that's using their data and analytics to provide certain services that they couldn't provide currently. But they have to take a whole new trajectory to show new patterns of growth. They've performed, they've delivered, they've shown they can provide content. Their content quality, unfortunately, has dropped as well because of the competition. And Disney Plus has amazing content. Just the Marvel universe alone gives them so much. And I think Netflix now has to look at how can we move to the next phase? What can we bring into our fold? And take a playbook from what Steve Jobs and Tim Cook did, and what Satya Nadella and Steve Ballmer did at Microsoft, and try and figure out the next iteration of content creation and who they are competing with. And unfortunately, they are competing with a lot more people than just the Disney Plus. Like TikTok and Instagram are producing content that competes with Netflix, which is long form. So they have to start looking broadly at how they can start incorporating other elements to take their platform to the next level.
Yeah, and you guys need to stop sharing your passwords. They're about to crack down, so please stop that. Tammy, to you now. Results that stood out for you this week on Wall Street?
Tesla. Again, a company that's disconnected, a valuable company disconnected from its stock price. I think the stock price has run too far and made it hard for the company to find that valuation. But Tesla numbers are outstanding, given that there was a point they weren't meeting demand. They were struggling to produce the right number of vehicles. Now they've got the gigafactories up and running. They're meeting demand. The price points are great. I think as an operational business, they're brilliant. I think now the share price is unfortunately taken on an Elon complex. So I think people are buying it as an Elon index rather than actually a Tesla index. But I think as a business, Tesla is great. Its share price, however, is not a representative of its business. So ideally, if the share price drops to a meaningful level, Tesla would be a buy for me. They're doing brilliantly well. Their battery technology, they are closing up their supply chain by going into mining themselves. They are meeting their targets. They are releasing the factories in the markets where these sort of things are demanded, Germany, China, and in the U.S. So I think the business is a brilliant business.
That share price has an Elon premium, I would say. Devin, yes. On your side, are you as bullish on Tesla as Tammy?
I like the space. I think Tammy really said it well, and that valuation is just really difficult to get involved with. You know, to the company's credit, I mean, the growth in production and revenue is exactly what they said, and even exceeding it at times. So, yeah, fantastic products, charismatic leader, interesting leader. Good company, but share price very, very expensive.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to some more tech news in the U.S. Of course, the tussle between the Twitter board and Elon Musk. Tammy, we spoke about this earlier on in the week. Yeah. And there's you spoke about the principal agent problem that is now facing the company, seeming that the board, getting a lot of criticism that the board isn't acting in the best interest of the shareholders with this. You saying that it would be better off in the hands of Elon. I mean, could the board lose this battle?
Yeah, look, it's going to be tough. The board has the fiduciary duty to make that decision, which is part of the problem, and I think it will highlight a lot of the issues around these things in America and locally. Most tech companies are sort of a two-tier structure in which the founders have a large control of the voting rights, and the investors have access to the economic rights, pretty much like what ShopRite has, where the founder has a significant portion of the voting and can pretty much go against the desires of the shareholders. I think the Twitter doesn't have that problem. But the problem it has is that the people on the board don't have skin in the game, in essence. They don't have enough shares in the company for their decision to be aligned with the shareholders. And this is a problem that Carl Icahn has raised many times before, that at least 50% of a board should be represented by its largest shareholders. And then the other 50% is there for governance and sound discipline on the board. And now what has happened is Elon has presented a bid that is significantly, almost 20% above the share price, but it's a few people who have called it less than 10% of the business, even less than that actually. I think it's around 5%, of which 2% is Jack Dorsey, who's leaving. I'm making the decision to sell or to buy. They've instituted a poison pill, which is a delaying tactic so that they have more scope, because if they don't do that, it'll force them to either look for a second buyer, white knight, or to consider the price and sell. So they're trying to buy time to maintain as many options ahead of them as possible. Mm-hmm. But the reality is they all know they'll run out of jobs. The CEO knows that Elon is going to replace him. The board knows the compensation is going to be zero if Elon comes through. So they are conflicted. They're conflicted in that they don't have enough stock, they don't have enough skin in the game, and are going to make a decision which may not align with the views of the shareholders.
Mm. All right, I've got two more viewer questions, and I'm going to give you guys one each. It's one that I always get confused with, RMI and RMH. Devin, you can pick which one you want. So someone's asking, please ask the panel if RMI is good, and the other one is any commentary on RMB Holdings, if there is anything positive that might happen there over time. So RMI, Rand Merchant Investment Holdings, the one that's unbundling Discovery and Momentum and will soon swap its listing with OUTsurance. And then RMH is the one that unbundled First Rand that now is basically property focused. So Devin, choose the one that you want and then we'll give the other one to Tammy.
Yeah, I'll take RMI. They're unbundling there. Lots going on at the moment. Some really good assets in this company, and I think what you're seeing is the trend that we've seen in other businesses locally as well, these holding companies to unbundle their key assets, you know, stand on their own two feet and give investors the choice where they want to be invested. So, you know, I applaud RMI for doing that. We like the Discovery assets, we long-term holders there. Momentum Metropolitan, not so much. And OUTsurance has proven to be a fantastic investment, and I'm really excited to see how that will perform as a standalone listing. I think one of the issues is that leading up into this unbundling that the share price ran really hard. I think the market liked that, and so it was reflective of the value unlock from the unbundling. So we're sitting back now and just waiting for the dust to settle and see what that valuation comes through for OUTsurance before we go ahead. But a fascinating proposition and one we're going to be watching closely.
Tell me your take on RMB Holdings. Of course, they'd unbundled that First Rand stake, and now they are mainly property focused. They have said also that they might want to unlock more value for shareholders through the RMB property stake. What your thoughts on that?
I think they are on their way to being a REIT. I think they understand the property market in South Africa and are going to convert into a REIT. I think the first round founders have realized that there's a lot of value. They've stagnated within their portfolio and are bundling the entire brand to enable all the assets to find true value. So I foresee it's going to become a REIT, and they are going to compete with the other REITs in the country and listed on the JSE. And that's, I think it's a good way forward for them. To think about it in simpler terms, they've got nothing else in the portfolio but property. Yeah. So in essence, it's a REIT.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Just lastly, gentlemen, we've got 30 seconds each. Your stock picks for today.
I'll jump in.
Yeah.
Sure. So mine is Nintendo, primary listing in Japan, but we get exposure in the US. It's one of the world's oldest developers of electronic games, got some really fantastic brand names behind it. They're moving into mobile app development quite significantly now with their partnership with an AI firm, Niantic. That's been great for them and adding to revenues. They've got a strong balance sheet with lots of cash. Few short-term headwinds. I mean, semiconductor shortage is hurting their console sales, and they've delayed release of a few games. But they guided the market end of last year that both sales and operating profits are going to rise, and we think this is a very exciting space for our clients.
All right, and tell me your stock pick.
I'm also going to go offshore, Nike. I think that's a brilliant business. They've got a great portfolio. They are specializing well. They're taking each portion of the business and treating it as a competitor, because they've recognized that people like Lululemon are taking their lunch in some of their brands. So they're streamlining properly. They're good dividend paying, and I think they've got a global reach. So Nike for me.
All right. Thank you very much, gentlemen, to the both of you. That's it for Stockwatch this week. Thanks to my guests, Devon Shoot from the Robey Group and Thamsa Nganeta from Shiloh Capital. From Izinati Kuma and the rest of the team, have a great weekend.